Hello and welcome to Eerie Earth. I'm your host, Kieran, and I'll be guiding you on your journey through the paranormal. Together we will learn about hauntings, dark tales, and much more. So sit back, relax, and join me as we explore this eerie earth. In this episode, I will take you to the winding warren of tunnels that stretch underneath the massive metropolis of London to tell you short stories of ghosts that plague the London Underground. London, England's capital city. This thriving metropolis is home to over 8 million people of different creeds and races all living together, going about their daily business, going to work and to the pub, totally unaware that beneath their feet in the miles of tunnels that make up the London Underground are tales of spectres and gruesome murders and suicides. Every single day, Londoners will enter the many stations dotted around the city, oblivious to the ghosts that could be sharing their journey with them. The dark figure of Bank and Monument. One cold, wet October night in 1996, Roger, a security guard working for British Transport, was making his way down the broken tiled steps into Bank Station to begin his shift. He put his belongings into his locker and went into the security office. As he entered the room, his colleague Dave, who was a rotund man with a bushy mustache, a balding head, and a portly belly that spewed over his trousers, turned to greet him, raising his stained coffee cup. Roger laid his keys and his badge down on the console which lined the wall and sat down on a creaky wheeled chair which moved underneath his weight. He filled in all the paperwork he needed to and began to watch the monitors which hung on the walls above him. Their grainy images flashing pictures of hundreds of people milling around the platform, waiting to get on the train, cramming into the large metal tube like sardines going on a day trip. Several hours passed and Dave had bid his farewells and gone home after a long 12-hour shift, leaving Roger alone in the security room. As the night dragged on, the station began to get quieter and quieter, with less people coming in to use the train, save from the odd person running to catch the last train home, hoping in vain that they didn't miss it. It would put a smile on Roger's face when he would see the person pounding the tiles towards the platforms, and he would make bets with himself as to whether they would make it or not, just to pass the time. As the last passengers left the station, he left the office and made his way up the long escalator to the top of the station, past the empty ticket booths and the newsstands to the gate. He pulled it across, the sound of scraping metal screeching through the station echoing off the walls. He sighed with relief that he was now on his own and made his way back down the escalator which he had turned off, his footsteps clanging on the large metal steps. He passed posters of theatre shows which were playing in the West End and thought to himself that he needed to book a ticket at some point. He reached the office again, opening the door and sitting back in the chair, sighing as the night dragged on. After the last train departed the station, Roger looked over at the clock and it read midnight. Time for a coffee and a cigarette, he thought to himself as he stood up, stretched and poured pitch black water into his coffee-stained mug. Added a splash of milk, turning the dark water a sickly caramel colour. He removed a cigarette from a crushed packet in his pocket and put it in his mouth, lighting it, inhaling the smoke and letting out a deep breath, filling the air with a thick plume of smoke. He turned back to the monitor, sitting down in the chair, and watched as a large dark figure appeared on the centre camera, which pointed towards the corridor, which was right outside the security room. He stared at the black mass as it moved from right to left, the smoke hanging in the room stinging his eyes as he stared at the screen. The cigarette was balanced on his bottom lip as he watched the figure appear on another monitor and fade away before his eyes. He quickly jumped up, spilling his hot coffee on the floor, smashing his mug, and he darted for the door. He threw the door open to be greeted with silence, the wind blowing through the empty station. Nothing. No sign of the black figure anywhere. Without looking, he fumbled for his torch and his keys and left the security room in search of the mysterious figure. His heart was pounding in his chest and his mouth was as dry as the Sahara. He patrolled the tunnels, his footsteps echoing through the darkness. As he approached the platform, he could hear a very strange sound resonating from the tunnel, bouncing off the tiles and into his ears. The sound of maniacal sobbing. Sweating, shaking, and barely able to breathe, Roger approached the empty platform. Before turning to his right onto the platform, he took a deep breath, his back against the wall. He waited a few moments to see if the sobbing would stop, but it didn't. and he peered around the corner. He could see the edges of a dark figure at the end of the platform. Confused and slightly scared, he stepped forward. In front of him stood a large figure of a nun, her head in her hands sobbing loudly, the sound filling the station. Roger stared in stunned silence at the ghostly figure and stammered to ask if she was okay. As the words stumbled out of his mouth, the sound stopped. The figure turned to Roger. Her face was pale and her eyes were dark pools of dread. He could see tears streaming down her face. She outstretched her arm and moved closer to him, letting out a pained and sorrowful cry, and disappeared as she reached him, sending Roger to the floor on his rear end. Roger clambered to his feet and ran back to the office, his heavy footsteps pounding the tiles. As he turned the corner, he slipped, sliding on the tiles, and crawled back to his feet, rushing towards the safe space of the security room. He burst through the door, slamming the door shut, throwing himself against it and sliding down to the ground, rubbing his face, trying to comprehend what he had just saw. The rest of the shift consisted of Roger staying in the office, refusing to leave the safeness of the room, until 7 a.m. when it was time to open the gate and the station was a bustling hive of activity once again. A few days passed and Roger had not told anyone of his encounter, worried they would not believe him or they would mock him. He quietly did some research into who the nun could have been and discovered reports of a nun who had died of a broken heart. She'd heard news of her brother's death. It said that her brother worked at the Bank of England and was hung for embezzlement. She haunts the station as she would wait at the bank station for her brother's return from work. The mysterious screaming woman of Farringdon Station. The sun has set over London in the cold February of 2001 when Harold arrived at Farringdon Station for his shift in the tunnels underneath the busy street above. It was his job to maintain the tracks and the wiring of the tunnels to ensure a smooth running of the service. The only time he was able to complete his job was in the dead of night when the last train left the station. He knocked on the metal gate that led down to the station and waited for the security guard to open up. Around him, the street had begun to fill up with nighttime revelers making their journeys to the various pubs surrounding the station, drunken conversations filling the air. Eventually, the guard came and opened the gate and Harold made his way down the tiled steps and into the winding tunnels of the station. He dropped his stuff off in the staff room and got into his high-vis jacket and, armed with his torch and helmet, made his way to the platform, greeting his colleagues who were doing the same. It was a normal shift, a team of around 20 people all working in the darkness of the tunnel, lit only by their headlamps and the odd standing floodlight that only lit parts of the tunnel. The rest covered in a thick shadow where anything could be lurking. The crackling sound of the portable radio that was sitting on a box against the wall filled the air and the chatter of the crew echoed through the tunnel. Harold was a big man, muscles protruding underneath his suit-covered t-shirt. Tattoos covered his dark skin, barely visible underneath the suit which built up on his arms. As he walked along the tunnel, checking the track for any inconsistencies or damages, the light from his torch, his only light source, thoughts of his bed and a nice warm cup of tea were dancing in his mind, tiredness creeping up on him. He passed a couple of his colleagues who were studying a frayed wire closely, discussing what they needed to do with it. The further along the tunnel he went, darkness began to envelop him. The stillness was palpable. It felt like the air was getting thicker and the temperature began to drop. The tunnel was eerily quiet. For a moment, Harold reveled in the peace and quiet, enjoying the time alone, when he was filled with a feeling of dread and foreboding. An ice-cold shiver ran down his spine to his feet. He spun around, shining his torch at every wall and further back along the tunnel. His colleagues had gone, leaving him entirely alone in this part of the tunnel. Echoes of distant talking could barely be heard as he continued along the tunnel, his pace quickening, muttering the lines to one of his favourite songs as he walked. After a few minutes, the feeling of nervousness and foreboding had eased slightly. Harold happened across a piece of track which needed some attention. He sighed and placed his torch in his mouth and removed a pen and a pad from his pocket and began to make notes on the location of the track and what needed doing to it. When his pen lifted off the paper when he was finished writing, a string of ink dripped from the nib. A loud female scream filled the air and echoed through the tunnel. The scream continued for several seconds, causing a slight ringing in Harold's ears. He stopped and stared into the darkness, his torch still in his slack-jawed mouth, barely able to stay in. For the few seconds which felt like a lifetime, Harold was frozen. The sound of his heart beating loudly in his chest was the only sound he could hear. As he battled with the thoughts in his head as to what caused the sound, he found he could move again. Removing the torch, he shone it through the pitch-black tunnel, partly wanting to find the source of the sound, but also hoping that he would not witness anything. Nothing. An empty tunnel was the only thing he could see through the beam of the torch. He swallowed loudly and stood up straight, breathing a sigh of relief. Against every fiber in his being, he managed to get his legs to carry him through the darkness of the tunnel towards his colleagues. As he ran, the beam of the torch swayed in his arms, illuminating several areas of the tunnel. He could hear the scream again from the darkness behind him, getting closer, following him. Eventually, with his chest burning and his legs like jelly, he made it back to the entrance of the tunnel, where his colleagues were sitting on the edge of the platform, the beam of the torch shaking in his hand. He swallowed hard as a bitterly ice-cold feeling enveloped his body. He tried to run, tried to get away, but his legs would not comply. The scream came again, filling every inch of the darkness, chilling Harold to the bone, a blood-curdling scream. Against every fiber in his being, he managed to get his legs to carry him through the darkness of the tunnel towards his colleagues. As he ran, the beam of the torch swayed in his arms, illuminating several areas of the tunnel. He could hear the scream again from the darkness behind him, getting closer, following him. Eventually, with his chest burning and his legs like jelly, he made it back to the entrance of the tunnel, where his colleagues were sitting on the edge of the platform. They looked up and saw Harold shaking, sweat pouring from his head, muttering incoherent gibberish about a screaming woman. Even before they got close to the spot, the tunnel was filled with an ice-cold air, and the ominous feeling was felt by everyone who was present. The scream erupted, loudly piercing the shadows and filling the ears of the terrified group. The men bolted from the tunnel, refusing to return to work at the tunnels of Farringdon Station. Legend has it that the spectre is that of an 18th century hat merchant who was murdered by her employer, who unceremoniously dumped her body in a shallow grave. Reports of the terrifying spectre are still being reported to this day. Coming up on Eerie Earth, we will venture back down to the underground stations underneath the streets of London. Welcome back to Eerie Earth. Get your ticket ready and join me on board as I tell you more ghostly tales that plague the London Underground. The ghostly sounds and cries of Bethnal Green Station. Susan and her husband Mark had been on their monthly date night, and Mark had decided to treat his wife to a lovely meal in a nice restaurant that they'd been thinking about going to for a while. They enjoyed their meal and had a sedate walk back to the station to catch the last train home. The station itself was busy with revelers and people trying to get home after a night out. Friday nights were always the same, and the mass of people made Mark feel a little bit uncomfortable. When the couple reached the platform, a large group of people had begun to congregate, waiting for the train to arrive. Mark led his wife down to the end of the platform away from the group to keep her safe from the large crowd, but to also have a little privacy so they could continue their conversation. After a few minutes of waiting, the tunnel at the far end of the platform was flooded with lights as the headlights from the train came into view and the large metal snake stopped at the platform. An alarm sounded as the doors slid open with a swoosh and the crowd crammed into the train, leaving no space for the couple or for a handful of people still left on the platform. Mark sighed as the doors closed and the train trundled to a start and disappeared through the tunnel. The platform was deathly quiet, with just a couple and two more people who were standing at the far end. Susan looked at the time on the board and it stated in bright orange writing that the train was due in 10 minutes. They sat down on a metal chair, which was less than inviting, perched on the edge, ensuring not to sit back on the dirty, sticky backrest. For several minutes, the couple sat in silence as they waited for the train to arrive. As they waited, Mark stood up and began walking towards the opening of the tunnel, with his hands in his pockets to stave off the cold air that filled the station. As he reached the pitch-black opening, he peered into the darkness to see what he could see. As his eyes slowly adjusted to the darkness, in the distance he could hear a strange sound, exceptionally low and distant. He turned to his wife, who was still sitting in the chair, staring at the filthy tiled floor, her hands in her pockets. He turned back to the tunnel as the sound started to get louder and clearer. He could make out the sound to be that of a woman and a child sobbing. He turned back to the platform to see if anyone else had heard the sound, but no one seemed to be reacting. Now intrigued, he took his hands out of his pockets and placed them on the soot-covered walls of the tunnel and leaned over the edge to see if he could hear the sound clearer. The sound happened again, louder than last time, now echoing through the darkness. He turned to his wife, who was now looking at him with a perplexed look on her face. She stood up and slowly, attentively walked over to her husband and listened to the sound that was radiating from the darkness. The sobbing was getting louder and much more intense, more pained. The couple looked back at the platform and their fellow passengers, who too were waiting on the platform, came over to the pair to try and make sense of the strange noise they could hear. The distressing sound of the woman and the child sobbing intensely exploded out of the tunnel, filling the platform, followed by the sounds of men and women in distress. Screams and disembodied cries filled the air. The couple jumped back from the edge of the platform, and the other two passengers did the same, all four bolting from the platform and along the corridor. As they passed the security office, Mark began to bang on the door loudly to get the attention of the station guard. Eventually, after what felt like hours, the door to the office opened and the large stature of the security guard filled the doorway. He asked what was wrong and was greeted with a jumble of noise which spewed from the quadruplet. He gestured for them to slow down and asked one at a time to tell what happened. Mark began to regale him with the noises that came from the darkness of the tunnel and filled the platform. The security guard looked stunned and replied with his own encounter of hearing the noises, explaining his story. Together with the security guard, they made their way to the platform to see if they could hear the noises, but the ominous, disturbing sounds had stopped. The final train of the evening arrived, and the four passengers boarded, leaving the noises behind in Bethnal Station. It said that during the Second World War, the station was used as an air raid shelter. During a heavy bombardment of London by German bombers, an anti-air raid gun that was situated outside of the station went off to defend the city. The noise was so loud that it reverberated through the station, sounding like a bomb had hit it, sending everyone who was in the makeshift shelter to panic and flee, causing a mass stampede where men, women and children were trampled to death as people tried to get out of the station. It's thought that 173 people lost their lives on this fateful day. The Angel of Aldgate. It was a wet and windy Wednesday night when Donald arrived at Aldgate Station to do some repair work on the roof of the station. He entered with his tools in his hands and shook off the water from his raincoat, droplets splashing on his floor. His thick black hair was sticking to his forehead as large droplets dribbled down his face. His bushy beard was sodden with rainwater as he rubbed his face with the collar of his jacket. Heavy rain over the past few weeks had caused some water damage to the ceilings above the platform, and Donald had been given the task of replacing some tiles and repairing the ceiling. When he arrived on the platform, he assessed the situation, realizing he would need to get his scaffolding to reach the spot where the water was coming through. A large puddle on the platform had appeared below a steady stream of water coming from the ceiling. He returned to his truck and started to bring down metal poles, ladders, wooden planks and large stone weights to begin setting up his scaffolding and his barriers to prevent public from coming anywhere near his working area. After about an hour, he climbed the rickety ladder of the scaffolding and steadied himself as he studied the water that was seeping through the tiles. After several moments of deliberation, he removed his tools from his toolbox and began to work on the wet ceiling. Several minutes passed and Donald had struggled to get the tiles off the ceiling but was now staring at a blank, wet wall where a large crack had appeared, with water slowly oozing out of it. The platform had begun to fill up with passengers waiting for their train to arrive, a hive of activity as the noise of chatter rose and filled his ears, making it hard to concentrate. Donald looked around at the various people on the platform, many watching him repair the ceiling. A wave of nervousness flooded over him as he felt like he was on stage. As he examined the crack in the wall, trying to decide what to do about it, he could feel the scaffolding shake slightly as the vibrations from the train coming through the tunnel flowed up the legs of the scaffolding. After a few seconds, a large train burst through the tunnel, a large gust of wind hitting the platform, shaking the scaffolding, causing Donald to grab onto the pole to steady himself. His stomach was in knots. The train stopped and the familiar sound of the doors opening with a swoosh filled the platform as the voice of the announcer crackled through the speakers.
Mind the gap!
The passengers flooded through the door and the platform was full of people coming off the train. After a few seconds, the door closed and the train departed, slowly entering the opposite tunnel and disappearing. Donald returned to the task at hand, trying to repair the crack in the ceiling. He climbed down from the scaffolding and went to his truck to grab a black bucket and some plaster, which he returned with. He filled the bucket with water and struggled to carry the now heavy full bucket up the ladder of the scaffolding, placing it on the wooden platform, pulling himself over the bar. He opened the bag of plaster and began to pour it into the bucket, watching the water turn from a liquid into a thick white paste. He stirred the mixture, grabbing a clump of now thick plaster and smearing it on his trowel, and began to fill the crack in the ceiling. He took a step back to admire his workmanship to make sure he'd filled the right area. As he stepped back, his left foot got caught on the bag of plaster, which was now half full, and he stumbled backwards, dropping his trowel on the platform below, wet plaster smashing on the tiles. Donald lost his footing, falling onto the pole of the scaffolding, which he had not secured tightly. As the pole came unhinged, popping out of its socket, Donald plunged from the scaffolding, falling through the air. His stomach flew into his throat as the air rushed out of his lungs. His heart skipped a beat. He fell for what felt like hours and landed with a loud crash on the tracks below. As he landed, he heard and felt a loud crack as his back collided with the metal rail of the track. As pain coursed through his body, he let out a gargled scream as electricity from the track exploded through his body, causing him to pulsate and writhe. As the onlookers from the platform gasped and screamed, his body stopped moving. He lay still and silent. His breathing labored and slow. Smoke rose from his body as his charred skin sizzled through the silence. After a few seconds, noise in the platform erupted again as the people clambered down to help him. Screams from people filled the air as they watched on in horror at the scene which played out in front of them. As the helpers approached his body in order to try and help, they stopped when they clambered down from the platform as they witnessed a white figure appear beside the man. They described the figure as an elderly woman dressed in white. She had thinning white hair and wore a long white robe. Onlookers said she was kneeling down beside Donald and was seen to be stroking his head gently. Light from the figure filled the entrance to the tunnel and the whole platform was filled with a gentle feeling of calm and tranquility. Within minutes, paramedics had arrived at the scene and taken over control of the platform, ushering people from the underground and closing down the station to make sure they could give Donald the best treatment that they could and the dignity that he deserved. As Donald lay unconscious with the paramedics treating his wound and preparing him for transportation to the ambulance, the white figure stood in the tunnel entrance watching on. With a soft smile on her face, she nodded and the paramedics took Donald on a stretcher through the station. As he was lifted from the tracks onto the platform, the figure slowly faded away, never to be seen again. Aldgate Station is one of the most haunted stations in the London Underground, even supposedly having their own paranormal logbook, which makes notes on any paranormal occurrences that happen within the station. Although the white figure was frightening, many believe that this figure saved the man's life, dubbing her the Angel of Aldgate. Although the names of the characters in these stories have been embellished and the stories have been enhanced, they are based on real encounters and the reports of the ghostly happenings within the underground stations that make up the world-famous London Underground. The ghost train of South Kensington Station. Phone calls, meetings, emails and deadlines, all thoughts that danced in his head as George left the office at 12 p.m. on a crisp Friday afternoon in December. The city had been covered in a thick layer of snow as Christmas celebrations had begun, with the joyous day just around the corner. George pulled his woolen scarf tighter around his neck as ice-cold breeze blew into his face as he entered through the entrance of the station. People rushing past him, clutching large packages and several shopping bags. As he walked down the slippery tile steps, taking his time, making sure he did not slip, he passed an elderly gentleman who was playing a violin, his wrinkled face taut with concentration, as he slid the bow across the strings, creating a beautiful sound which filled the station. At his feet was an open violin case with red fabric inside, covered with coins from people who had walked past and enjoyed the sound of the Christmas songs being played. George smiled at the sight, a brief distraction from the whirlwind of thoughts that careened around his head. He was due to give a presentation at his company's head office later that day. This was hopefully going to close a business deal that they had been working on for a very long time, so it was a big day for him, and the nerves twisted and tangled inside of him with every step he took. George straightened his small, round spectacles and pulled his coat closer, tighter, as he weaved through the mass of people through the station. He turned the corner and followed the long passageway. Movie posters and advertisements for perfume and the most recent mobile phone adorned the walls, plastered to the tiles, taking up most of the wall. Graffiti written on some of the tiles, people's names stating that they had been there. George quickened his pace, going from a walk to a trot, in the hopes that he would get to the train quicker as he waded through the sea of people coming in the opposite direction. As he turned another corner to the right, he was forced to stop as the wall of bodies blocked his path. Through the crowd, he could see the train waiting at the platform, allowing people to come off. As he reached above the heads of the people, hoping with some miracle that the driver would see his waving hand and hold the doors for him. Unsurprisingly, it didn't work, and the train doors closed with a loud swoosh, and the train trundled to a start, disappearing through the dark opening of the tunnel and out of sight. George let out an exacerbated sigh as he waited for the crowd of people to leave the tunnel like cattle. As he stepped on the tiled train platform, he looked around and noticed a handful of people waiting for the next train. George sat back on a cold metal chair which was against the wall of the platform. As soon as his back hit the cold metal of the chair, the tunnel of the underground was filled with a large headlight bouncing off the wall, illuminating the black walls, showing all the wires and pipes which adorned them. Finally, George thought as he stood up looking around him. The platform was fairly empty. Only him and three other people were waiting for the train, a contrast to the amount of people who had come off the train before. As the light got closer to the platform, the clattering sound of the train was deafening, filling every inch of the tunnel with the sound. The sound was different, George thought, different from the metal snakes that weaved their way through the various tunnels that made up the underground. While the normal sound of the trains made a slight trundling sound, the screeching of the metal wheels on the tracks were distinct. The train made a loud chugging sound, the clattering of the tracks much louder. As the light got closer, George noticed a large, thick plume of smoke bellow out of the tunnel opening, which caused him to step back, and he noticed others on the platform do the same. Confusion plastered to all of their faces. As the smoke filled the platform with a loud whistle filling the air, high-pitched and piercing, as loud steam train burst through the smoke. Its red body was distinct, shining through the smoke. Gold calligraphy adorned the side of the panels. the smoke clouding his vision, but George could notice the large black wheels of the train, large pistons pumping the wheels around, the deep chugging sound slowing down to a stop as the large locomotive pulled in, the smoke dispensing. George looked on in shock as he noticed a man hanging from the side of the train. He wore a peaked hat, white with a black brim and gold leaves stitched into the white fabric. He wore a white shirt, crisp and clean, and a smart black waistcoat, a black tie tucked in. Pressed in iron trousers led down to shiny black shoes, the light from the platform reflecting off them. When the train came to a complete stop, carriages disappearing off into the tunnel, George noticed there was something odd about the appearance of the train. It seemed to glow slightly, and he was sure he could see the underground sign on the wall behind it, through the red panelling, but he thought he was just imagining it. As the passengers on the platform stared on in shock at the steam train coming through the tunnel, the man lifted his hat. His slick black hair, perfect and still. He gave the onlookers a half smile. Suddenly, two beams of light filled the tunnel from behind the train, and the familiar sound of the underground train came trundling along the tracks, the clattering of the wheels distinct and loud. A loud, deep horn filled the tunnel. Fear filled George's being as he jumped back from the platform. Thoughts of seeing a large train crash filled his mind. As the lights got brighter and the sound of the train got louder, the steam locomotive, which had just emerged from the tunnel mere seconds ago, slowly faded away. The smoke and the driver with it, as the metal underground train burst onto the platform, slowing to a stop. The doors opening with a swoosh, and the platform was filled with people emerging from the train. Through the crowd, George managed to catch the eye of one of the other passengers who'd witnessed the mammoth train emerge from the tunnel, and he shrugged his shoulders and got on the train, disappearing into the crowd. Tales of the mysterious train being witnessed in the South Kensington station date back to 1928, where the first sighting of the ghostly train was witnessed. It is said that the train which people have seen pulling into the station is not even a real train, and that no train that people are describing to have seen has ever existed. The most recent sighting of the train was back in 2013, but who knows? If you ever visit South Kensington, you may witness the spectral locomotive and its ghostly conductor. The Wailing Woman Wandering King's Cross Station. Dark skies had fallen over the city and the streets were wet with a heavy rain that battered the pavements outside, large puddles forming underfoot, a sea of umbrellas bobbing up and down, hiding people underneath. Heavy raindrops pounded the canopy of black and white, a patchwork of monochrome covering the busy street. The sound of sloshing as buses and cars flew past, hitting large pools of water, sending it cascading over the poor, unaware pedestrians. Lights from the shop windows inviting shoppers in to browse their wares, the warmth clawing at their skin, invisible tendrils pulling people closer. Shanice weaved her way through the crowd of men and women who were walking with determination to get home from the office or a day exploring the thriving metropolis. She was eager to get home after a long, hard day of work in the hospital. Her feet throbbed with pain and the burning sensation erupting, exploding with every step that she took. She darted to the left to avoid a large man in a smart suit who was barging his way through the crowd, bashing people aside like a snowplow bursting through a thick wall of compacted snow, her small stature dwarfed by his gigantic frame. As she lunged out of the way, her right foot disappeared into a deep muddy puddle, and her blue trainer, useless against the river of water that gushed into her shoe, soaking her feet, her toes turning to ice as they bathed in their frozen tomb. She turned back to the man with a look of disgust plastered on her face and muttered profanities as he disappeared through the crowd of people. She did not have time to dwell on the rudeness of the mammoth battering ram before she was shoved in the back by another rushing three-piece tank. She fell to the ground, landing in a murky pool, her white coat stained brown with mud. the water dripping off her face as she coughed and spluttered. She got to her feet and tried to brush herself off, but the mud stuck to her like glue, her small hands spreading the brown gloop over her jacket. Frustrated and very angry, Shanice continued to follow the stampede of people down the road, knowing that King's Cross Station was coming up and she'd be able to disembark from the river of bodies guiding her to an unknown destination. After several minutes, she was able to rush to the left and escape the mass of people into the relatively quiet station. The wall of bodies rushing past the doorway filled the entrance of the station with a dull moan of voices, which seemed to echo in her ears as she rushed past newsstands and coffee shops. Passengers eating dinner outside of restaurants, the smell of the food slithering into her nostrils, her stomach twisting and turning, screaming with hunger, a grumble audible in her ears over the din of voices. As she jogged to find her platform, her eyes dancing all around looking for the large looming screens which told the visitors to the station where they needed to go to catch a ride home. Eventually, she was able to find a large black screen with yellow writing which flashed up names of towns and cities from around the country and the times the trains were leaving and where they were leaving from. She turned and looked for the escalators which led down to the depths of the station. A large sign with a giant arrow pointing to the underground adorned the wall behind her, next to a large poster reminding visitors to visit platform 9 3/4 for their chance of an excellent photo opportunity. This made Shanice smile. Through the horrendous day she was having, she was reminded of her love of the boy wizard and the memory of her first date with her boyfriend when he took her to King's Cross Station to get a photo of the famous platform. Her cold, shivering body was filled with a warmth which seemed to hug her tightly. She made her way down the metal steps of the escalators, her footsteps echoing through the tunnel into the deep warren that ran underneath the famous station. A train had just arrived, and a sea of people were coming towards her as she walked down the tunnel, clutching her orange and white ticket tightly in her hand. She waited as the mass of people passed her by. She was able to walk onto the platform. As her wet trainer squeaked off the tiles onto the tarmac of the platform, the train door closed and it began to trundle away. Shanice sighed and leant against the wall, resting her head against the cold tiles, her long dark hair cushioning her head. She removed her phone and a picture of her and her boyfriend flashed up on the screen. She smiled slightly at their images as they looked back at her. The time was 7 p.m. and the platform was empty apart from another couple who were cuddling at the far end. She unlocked her phone, her fingers sliding on the glass, and she clicked on the social media apps. Not that she ever got anything of interest on them, it was just to pass the time. As photos of her friends flashed up on the screen, she noticed something out of the corner of her eye. A woman had appeared on the platform. Her clothes were scruffy, torn and dirty. Her hair was untidy, reminded Shanice of a rugged crow's nest. Her skin was covered in dirt, dried blood barely visible through the mass of mud and soot on her arms. Her hands covered her face as she walked onto the platform, and Shanice swore she could hear the woman sobbing, a low, desperate cry. She lowered her phone, placing it in her pocket, and turned to the other couple who were on the platform to see if they noticed the woman as well. The man caught her gaze and nodded, making his way over to her. He straightened his raincoat, tightened his woolen scarf as he approached. His girlfriend stood nervously behind him, biting her nails, her gaze never leaving her boyfriend. Shanice stood up straight and started to make her way over to the woman also, but the man put his hand out as if to tell Shanice to stop. She removed the lanyard from around her neck, showing her badge, her face plastered on the plastic, with the letters NHS plastered to the top. Next to her photo were the words Doctor. She nodded and the pair approached the woman. As the man reached her first, he asked if she was okay, his voice laced with nerves, but the woman did not respond. Shanice spoke, her voice was strong and confident, and she asked if the woman was okay, if she needed help. Slowly her hands came down from her face and flopped by her side. She turned to the man and Shanice, and the skin on her face was peeling off. Large areas of muscle and blood covered her rotten features. As she turned, her mouth fell open. She let out a loud, guttural cry which echoed through the platform. Her arms raised as she lunged for the pair. The man stumbled back, falling onto his backside and staggering to his feet, running back to his girlfriend, shielding her from the grotesque sight. Shanice lunged back against the wall as the woman cried maniacally, her sobs piercing the ears of onlookers before she disappeared in front of them. The platform fell silent. Just the sound of the trio's beating hearts filled their ears. They shared a look, shocked, terrified and concerned. As they were about to speak, the words getting caught in their throats, the platform was filled with the sound of a train that was burst through the tunnel, the screeching of the brakes like nails down a blackboard. The doors opened with a loud swoosh and a familiar voice of the announcer telling passengers to mind the gap, fill the air. The trio shared one last look as they entered the train, the door closing behind them, and the train trundled to a start, disappearing through the darkness, leaving the platform empty. The tales of the crying woman of King's Cross Station have been told for years as different sightings of the distraught spectre have been seen in different parts of the station. She is seen in the underground but is also seen and heard in the main station. It is said that in 1987, during a busy commute, a passenger innocently dropped a lit match following lighting a cigarette. The match happened to land on a pool of grease which had built up at the bottom of the escalator which led to the main station, igniting, causing a large wall of flames to erupt through the station. As police and fire crews fought to douse the flames, it is thought that 31 people lost their lives and more than 100 people were injured in the horrendous fire that gutted the underground station. Following its refurbishment, tales of the haunting woman have been told. It is thought that she is one of the unfortunate victims of the fire which ripped through the station on that fateful day. So next time you go to King's Cross Station, be sure to be on the lookout for the wailing woman you may hear as you get on your train. Or who knows, she may show herself to you. The ashen-faced girl of St. Paul's Station. Music thumped inside of his head and his feet stuck to the sticky floor as Lee went from one end of the bar to the other. The loud beat of the music erupted through his body, shaking his bones, but he loved it. The excitement of working in the bar in the heart of London at the weekends was palpable. Customers lining the large metal bar, thrusting money into his face, demanding service. People enjoying themselves, letting their hair down after a busy week working in the city. The lights of the bar danced around in time with the beat of the music, briefly illuminating the faces of the men and women in the bar. Lee loved his job. The excitement, the party atmosphere, and the money wasn't too bad either. He finished his shift at 3 a.m, and the loud music still ringing in his ears, he left the bar into the wet street, the light from the street lamps dancing off the water on the ground. The streets were quiet. The revelers had given up and gone home, succumbing to their tiredness. He put his headphones on his head and the large earphones covering his ear and zipped up his grey hoodie tightly up to his neck. With his hands in his pockets, he walked towards the underground station to catch one of the last late night trains. If he missed this one, he would have had to crash at a friend's house, he thought to himself, as he quickened his pace. After 10 minutes of walking the wet, quiet streets, he reached the entrance to the underground station. A security guard waited at the gate and was about to pull down the shutter when Lee caught his attention and jogged under the gate. He thanked the security guard as he jogged down the tile steps, leaving wet footprints and the rubber from his shoes squeaking, echoing through the station. The song playing from his phone was upbeat and loud, causing Lee to bob his head as he waited on the platform for the train to arrive. As he enjoyed the music, he watched a small mouse sneak out from beneath the platform, climbing over the metal tracks and down in between the rails, and began to nibble at the remnants of what Lee assumed to be a burger, but soot and mould had made it unrecognisable. The mouse tried to pull the large mouldy substance away from the dusty resting place, but it was too heavy for the small creature to carry. Lee smiled at the determination of the small mouse with a pang of guilt tugged at his heart, that he could not help the small creature. After a short while, the mouse gave up and scrambled onto the metal rail, scuttling along it, its small feet creating a light pinging noise as it scurried along the tunnel. Lee watched as the mouse stopped in its tracks and looked up from the tunnel as large lights filled the darkness. The mouse bounded off the rails and squeezed into a small hole in the wall, disappearing just in time for the train to arrive and stop at the platform, the doors opening slowly. Lee stepped into the train. The music from his phone had turned to a slow melody, which relaxed him as he sat on the dirty blue chair, his back resting on the equally dirty backrest. But he was too tired to care and leaned his head against the dirty window, staring up at the strip lighting on the train, his eyes flickering open and closed as tiredness tried to engulf him. He fought with every fibre of his being to stave off sleep as it clawed at his body, like a demon pulling him to hell. He lifted his head and rubbed his face and taking in a deep breath. He took his phone out of his pocket and unlocked it. The album cover of the band he was listening to flashed up on the screen, a large skeleton wrapped in chains standing in front of a large wall of fire. He looked up to the chair opposite him and noticed someone was sitting there. He thought it was strange that the person would sit opposite him when the carriage was empty. He looked up and down the carriage just to confirm there was no one else on the train and looked back at the girl. She hung her head, looking down at her feet. She had long, straight black hair which fell onto her shoulders and wore a white top and black jeans. Her hair fell over her face, making it difficult for Lee to see her eyes, but he could make out her nose, which seemed to poke out from beneath the dark tendrils which covered her features. Apprehension filled Lee as he looked at the strange sight in front of him. As the train started to slow as it pulled into St. Paul's Station, this was not his stop, but he stood up and moved to another chair, unnerved. Lee sat down as the doors closed and the train started again and moved off into the tunnel. Before the darkness of the tunnel engulfed the train, Lee took one last look at the strange girl who was still staring at the floor in the chair in front of where he was sat. As the darkness of the tunnel filled the train, lights from the tunnel flickering and creating a strobe effect in the carriage, Lee noticed the girl had disappeared from her previous spot, but had reappeared in the chair opposite him again, still staring at the floor, her long hair covering her face. Suddenly, the lights inside the carriage burst to life, casting the carriage into a bright white light, and he noticed the girl was gone. He was alone in the carriage, as he rubbed his face, convinced that it was tiredness which caused the strange occurrence. The train pulled into the next station. The words "Bank" appeared on the tiled wall inside the famous underground logo. Lee jumped up as the train stopped and left the carriage onto the platform and turned back to see the empty carriage trundle off into the tunnel as he was left alone on the platform before leaving the station. He slept well that night, forgetting about the strange occurrence that happened on the train, convinced it was just tiredness and he didn't want to think about it again. His day was spent by visiting the gym and resting before his shift at the bar that night, which he'd been looking forward to. Saturday nights were always the best nights as people were a lot more relaxed and it was busier. 5 o'clock crept around and Lee arrived at the bar to start his shift. The bar was busy already with people watching a football match on TV, England playing Spain in a friendly match. Lots of customers wore England shirts and were shouting profanities at the TV, which made Lee laugh that people could get so passionate about a sport. The shift went quickly, and the bar was full of energy from the customers and everyone was in high spirits. "The music is on point tonight," Lee told one of his colleagues as they had a moment of downtime. He mentioned to his friend about the strange girl on the train the night before and they discussed it. They said it was a bit weird, but it was probably nothing. The rest of the shift went quickly without any problems and Lee finished his shift at 3 a.m. The streets were a little bit more full this time as revelers staggered home, the lights from the fast food restaurants beckoning them like moths to a flame. Lee made his way to the underground station, greeted the security guard as he stood guard at the entrance, ready to close down the station. Down the tile steps, along the winding corridor onto the platform, and he was lucky that the train had just arrived and he hopped onto the carriage and took a seat. He took out his phone and started to play a video. A video was of a man doing tricks on a skateboard and jumping down stairs and over rails. The music playing was loud in his ears. The train trundled to a start, causing Lee to sway slightly. As he watched the video, he constantly kept looking over his phone, hoping not to see the creepy girl again. Nothing. Lee let out a sigh of relief and got comfy on the chair as he continued to watch the video. The train clattered along the tracks and entered a tunnel, and the lights from the carriage began to flicker, and Lee looked up from his phone to see the girl sitting in the chair opposite him, her long black hair covering her face, just the tip of her nose visible through the vine-like hair. He let out a yelp of surprise as the girl appeared. His voice cracked as he asked the girl if she was okay. Through the flickering of the light, he noticed that the girl slowly began to raise her head. He was just able to make out her pale eyes through her hair. As the train pulled into St. Paul's station, the lights from the cars flickered again, and the spectre disappeared, as if someone turned off a TV. Lee jumped up and ran along the carriage to the dividing doors, where there was a couple sitting next to each other, cuddling. Like a madman, Lee started to regale the pair with what he saw, explaining the strange spectre's appearance, that he had seen her the night before. One of the men in the couple stood up and went over to where Lee was sitting and to have a look at what he was talking about, but was unable to find or see anything. He returned to Lee and told him that perhaps he imagined it. Lee placed his hands on his head, trying to work out if he had imagined the image or not, but he was convinced that he didn't. The train pulled into Bank Station and Lee disembarked and made his way up the tiled steps and onto the street into the cold night. The next day, Lee was filled with apprehension about going to work that night, as he was scared that he would come face to face with a girl again on his way home, but he had no choice but to get the train home. As the day went on, he started to forget about the spectre and he went to work. The shift was another easy one and it went quickly, ending at 3 a.m. and Lee made his way to the underground. As he approached the security guard, he gave a nervous smile and the security guard nodded back. Lee started down the stairs and stopped. He turned back and went to the security guard and asked nervously if anyone had reported seeing this girl on the train. The guard said he had not and gave Lee a very strange look, closing the gate behind them. Lee nodded and made his way along the corridor and onto the platform. Again, the train was waiting for him and he hopped on. The carriage was empty again and a pang of nerves tugged at his heart as he sat down on the chair. The train chugged to a start and disappeared into the dark tunnel. As the train powered through the darkness, the lights began to flicker, as they had done all weekend, and as if on cue, the girl appeared in front of him, her head pointed at the floor, her hair flowing over her face. Lee jumped up and asked what the spectre wanted. She slowly raised her head, this time fully, and her hair parted to show her grey, ashen skin. Pale eyes peered into Lee's soul, and her blackened lips slowly opened. A low, guttural growl emanated from her throat as she stood up, reaching for him. As the train pulled into St. Paul's station, the spectre disappeared. Lee was terrified, leaning against the wall of the train, shaking, tears building up in his eyes. The train started again and entered another tunnel, plunging the train into darkness. Lee managed to pull himself onto the chair as the lights flickered away. He saw a figure standing at the end of the train. He jumped up to his feet and noticed the girl hanging her head, her hair covering her face again. Lee staggered back from the spectre as it charged along the carriage with one arm outstretched, the same guttural growl erupting from her mouth. Lee screamed. The train pulled into Bank Station and the carriage was filled with a bright light from the station and from the platform. As the spectre reached Lee, who was now cowering on the floor, she disappeared. The train stopped and the doors slid open. Lee jumped to his feet and threw himself out of the door, landing on his backside, and crawled towards the wall of the platform, staring at the train. He watched as the doors closed and the train started along the tracks, and the spectre was standing in the center of the carriage, her head hanging and her hair covering her face. Sighting of the girl with the ashen face at St. Paul's station is said to have been seen over a period of 4 consecutive nights and was not reported again following her initial sighting, but it is said she appeared when the train pulled into St. Paul's station. Thank you so much for listening to these original tales from the London Underground. Thank you again for listening. Bye-bye for now.